County. We're bringing in some chairs for members of the public who are here this evening. So we'll do that as quietly as we can and deal with some of the preliminary issues. Since we do have a quorum. Yep. We're good. Okay, Kat, you want to call the roll, please?
Ammons?
Present.
Anderson?
Here.
Beckett?
Here.
Benzel?
Here.
Betts?
Here.
Carter? Cowart?
Present.
Dennis?
Here.
Gladney? James?
Here.
Jay?
Here.
Jones?
Here.
Knott?
Here.
Kurtz?
Here.
Langenheim? McGinty?
Here.
Michael?
Here.
Mosier? Nudo?
Here.
O'Connor?
Here.
Richards? Rosales? Sapp?
Here.
Sapp? Schrader? Smucker? Weibel?
Here.
Wysocki?
Here. Mr. Weibel?
Mr. Gladney called me today, said he was not feeling well, so he's probably not at this meeting.
Okay, duly noted. I need a motion to approve the County Board resolution to meet as a committee of the whole.
So moved. Second.
Motion by Beckett, seconded by Rosales. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Need a motion to approve the minutes of April 6th. Motion by Kurtz.
Second.
Seconded by James. Discussion. There is one typographical item that I found over on page 8, line 350. The very last sentence, I believe Mr. Kurtz said he did not like being rushed into a vote without time to research the issue. Yes. Anything else? All those in favor of approving the minutes as amended signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries. I need a motion to approve the agenda and the addenda for the evening. Motion by Anderson, seconded by Kurtz. We have two. Mr. Beckett?
I just think in view of the issues and why I am assuming most people are here, that we should do ELUC first, and I would suggest we do Highway second and Facilities last. And then within ELUC, I see no reason why 10B1 couldn't be handled first.
Mm-hmm. I think what we're going to do, because we don't have all the major participants for the ELUC agenda here at this hour, we're going to do the text amendment regarding the church issue first.
Everyone.
Right. And then we'll go back to highway facilities and then finish up ELUC.
That's fine.
Any other issues regarding the agenda?
Barb, excuse me.
Yes, Mr. James.
Which is going to be first?
The first item is going to be under ELUC, item B1.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. All those in favor of the agenda as rearranged signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Public participation.
There's additional room here by the exit door, so if some of you want to move out and clear some of that entranceway, they could move right here.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. Okay. Again, for those of you who came in late, if you do want to speak, there are little white slips for public participation found at the desk at that far right entrance. So if you want to speak, fill one out, bring it over, and we'll get you included. If not, I'm going to assume that the stack I have is what we're going with. Okay. Well, let's start with Mr. Howe.
My name is Jimmy. I'm a trustee for Apostolic Life Church. I've been a member since around 1990 when we started. I'm speaking in behalf of the church, and we strongly support the Lifeline Connect program at our church. Living quarters inside of one of our buildings. Volunteering as well as financial support for Lifeline.
Thank you. We have a number of others who are speaking to that same item, and their presentations are kind of orchestrated by Mr. Weber. So I'm going to just have them all come up, and then they know how they're going to follow each other. Some of their statements are very brief, so we're just going to kind of go through the group. So, Mr. Weber, if you would start and move it off of there.
Thank you very much. If you are going to speak for a minute, why don't you come up so that we'll save the time of going back and forth. Thank you again for changing the agenda. That's very kind of you, Madam Chairperson, members of the Committee of the Whole. Lifeline Connect is a faith-based rehabilitation program for men suffering from drug, alcohol, and prescription addiction. Currently, there are 8 men in the program. There is a possibility that they would like to expand that. The facility adjoins and is operating by the Apostolic Life UPC Church on their 6.5-acre tract at the edge of town. The church, beautifully renovated, is housed in the former Pyramid Paper Company buildings on High Cross Road. The church has operated Lifeline Connect for several years as a religious function of the church. The men involved in the main program live on site in a dormitory-type facility. It's merely an accessory use to the church property. Even if currently planned expansion were completed, it would still only be less than 1/10 of the size of the church itself. This use is not specifically listed in the county zoning ordinance and should be added. Tonight, we address the possible addition of this use by right in R4 and as a special use in Ag 2. Since we are Ag 2, that's our interest. Other potential special uses in Ag 2 are, I would consider, much more intrusive. Motel, school, nursing home, library. You might note the list of requirements which must be met by a church or a synagogue in order for a program to comply. 24/7 supervision, religious connection near municipality, etc., and operated by a church or a synagogue. Cases allowing these types of facilities require a minimum amount of possible harm to the public in the way of their health, safety, or welfare. This organization has a history of quiet, supervised operations and, I believe, meets those requirements. This religious-oriented facility is both a school and a residence. It provides, however, a substantial weapon with which we can fight back on the war against drugs. Rather than risk harm to the area's health, safety, and welfare, facilities such as this actually benefit it. There may be some different opinions on whether such a facility is properly described as an accessory use to a church or a temple. I mention this briefly because this is somewhat underneath the application approach. There are many examples of allowable accessory religious uses such as seminary, dorm in an R1 zone, drug assistance and education facility where the adverse risks are controlled, homeless kitchen, classes, evening meetings, that was an Urbana case, monastery with dorms, home for unwed mothers, daycare, and on and on. Some religious accessory uses have not been allowed. One was a printing press, one was a radio station, one was indeed a rescue mission, but there had been no proof before the court that the minister or the church were directly involved. As you think about this possibility, please compare in your mind this use or request to Hillel Foundation and McKinley Foundation. Both of them include large active dorms, which are considered to be accessory uses to the church and the synagogue. The Fair Housing Act and the ADA also require that this use be allowed. Their definition of disability includes those seeking assistance for chemical dependency. The zoning ordinance cannot treat disabled persons differently than those who are not disabled. In addition to being a function of the sponsoring religious institution, facilities such as those being suggested are also residences. As a residence, it has the protection of the Fair Housing Act. It's also an educational institution. As such, it has the protection of the ADA. The Church and Lifetime Connect respectfully request that a facility such as Lifeline Connect be welcomed, not merely accepted. The Church is willing to proceed under this approach. However, of course, it must retain its rights to suggest that it is indeed an accessory use, that the ADA applies, and that the Fair Housing Amendment applies. In the end, most cases that address questions like this are determined on a review of the facts. Here, the facts and the history of Lifeline Connect speak in favor of allowing such facilities in R4 and as a special use in Ag 2. A few people will speak very briefly, but just so you know who's here, would those people who are here in favor of this project please stand? Thank you very much. Our society needs more, not fewer, well-run institutions like Lifetime Connect. The ordinance should clarify its right to exist and proceed with a modest expansion. Thank you very much. If you have any questions for any of us, please ask at any time. Thank you.
My name is Scott Oltop. I work at Salt and Light in Champaign. I'm not affiliated with the Apostolic Life Church. I don't go there, but I'm a resident of Urbana. I do the financial literacy part of their education. I also coach one-on-one with the guys in financial counseling, and I fully support what they're doing with the men in the program and love what they're doing. It's some of the transforming some of the lives there.
Hi, my name's Randy Brown. I'm director of Lifeline Connect. I've been involved in the community and ministry for about 18 years, and a significant component of the ministry that myself and the church has been involved in is in the area of recovery, of men that have been seeking recovery for their lives. One thing that we've noticed that had been missing that was a hindrance was without the structured, safe, supervised environment, we had trouble helping men achieve long periods of sobriety in order to achieve and give them the tools that they needed for recovery. Lifeline Connect, this residency program, answered that question and provided what we needed to help them achieve that sobriety in a very safe, supervised environment. From the very inception, when we even started to think about the inception of Lifeline Connect, we felt a strong obligation to maintain a not only just a safe church campus, but a safe operation in the community. And we developed policy procedure that includes structure from first thing in the morning, 6:30 in the morning, all the way through lights out at 10 o'clock. The men are involved in activities like prayer, Bible study, classes, and community work, different things all day long, and 24/7 they are supervised. The curriculum that they're involved in involves such areas as life quests, life skills, ACTS, alcohol and chemical treatment series. Our entire staff has been certified in the Genesis Relapse Prevention Program. Every man goes through not only individual counseling and relapse prevention, but they also attend group meetings that help them with relapse prevention also. The campus is extremely safe, extremely supervised, and I can't stress that enough, the fact that we felt such a strong responsibility, because not just for the community, but every one of our children, grandchildren, nieces, nephews, everybody attends the same church where these men become acclimated into this church family and become involved. And we have a strenuous screening process before we accept a man in the program. And I can tell you there's far more that we don't accept than those that we do accept. And I want to be brief. I'm passionate about it. I could take your entire evening and another day talking about it. But I would like to, anybody that is interested, that would like to come by and view the facility and have a tour, I would be glad to give them that tour.
My name is John Grubb. I live in 1902 Shelley Court. My wife and I have lived there about 11 years. It's a neighborhood directly adjoining the church and Lifeline Connect. I support the program, and I'm not aware of any complaints in the neighborhood from any of the neighbors resulting from Lifeline being located there, and have only heard positive comments. Thank you.
My name is Thomas Martin. I was a resident of Lifeline Connect for approximately 2 years. Before coming to the program, my life was a wreck. I was addicted to prescription medications, marijuana, methamphetamine, and this program has changed my life completely. It's given me a life of purpose, a life of discipline, and a life of structure. And because of this program, I've been clean for 2.5 years.
My name is Jeffrey Branson. I come from a family of addiction and a life of addiction for about 9 years. I went through Lifeline Connect, and it's taught me how to live and cope with behaviors that I used to use the drugs for. And now I've been clean for almost 3 years. And I mean, it's a great program. It's not just for anybody. I mean, like, it's not a place for prisoners to bond out to, or probationary people to get sent to. It's a voluntary program, and it's if you want it and need it. It's a great place. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Leslie Cotton. I just graduated the program about a month ago. I predominantly come from a well-to-do family. I was raised in church my whole life. Went on to go to college, got a degree, pursued a career, and got mixed up in drugs. And I tried recovery on my own, tried to do things myself, but that didn't work. Obviously, I needed some tools under my belt. I needed a different perspective on life, and I came to Lifeline Connect. It's strictly a volunteer program, and I can stand here before you today and tell you that it's changed my life. And I've been clean 13 months.
My name is Randy Roberts. I live at 4210 East Airport Road in Urbana, and I am a neighbor of the church in this program. And I would just reiterate everything that's been said up to this time. I don't want to, you know, regurgitate everything. As a homeowner, as a lifelong resident of Champaign County, I'm obviously concerned about property values. And I do have occasion to drive by this facility each and every day, and sometimes several times during the day and night, evening, and you don't even know that they're there. So I would strongly urge this body to approve the amendment. Thank you.
Hi, Hi, I'm Derek Bashir, a resident here of Urbana, and I'm not a member of the church, but I'm a strong supporter of the program. We support it, my wife and I, we support it financially, and I work with the guys every now and then, spend time with them, and we do projects together, and it's a great program. I hope that you can find it in your heart to allow this amendment to go through. Thank you.
Hi, my name is R.J. Eaton. I am a current member at Apostolic Life UPC, and I'm the Director of Operations, which means I live on campus with the men. As is, there is a strict and structured curriculum and constant supervision, although it is seldom needed. We believe in and practice strict accountability with the guys. The first 3 months, 90 days, no man is by himself. He's got somebody with him even to go to the bathroom. Not until you're into your seventh or eighth month will you go anywhere by yourself, and that is when you have a job. There has been no need for me to send anybody home, dismiss anybody. We haven't had those type of behavior problems. We've had small little arguments, as anybody does who lives in a dorm with four or five, eight guys. But up to this point, it really has been a privilege serving men and changing their lives, not turning away men who would have no other chance or no other hope. We have to do something to help these guys, or death is imminent. This is what I truly believe, and this is why I do it. Thank you.
I'm Pastor D.L. Rogers, and as been stated, the Lifeline Connect program is a residential training rehabilitation center in association and administrated by Apostolic Life Church. It is a whole life treatment of a person's needs, recovering from substance addiction abuse, and the purpose is to create an effective and comprehensive Christian faith-based solution to the life-controlling drug and alcohol addictions. And so by providing a safe, healthy environment, we train these individuals so that they can be transformed, restored, and reconnected to their community, to their families, and to their friends and financial stability. And Lifeline Connect Ministry endeavors to help men rebuild their lives spiritually, emotionally, and financially. Lifeline Connect is patterned after thousands of like residential recovery centers throughout our nation. And the men that are enrolled here are, as been stated, on a volunteer basis. We ask them to enroll for 1 year, and then they are involved in a very intense training program. They're given the opportunity to transition back into employment after they've proven themselves reliable through the program. We usually accommodate 6 men while housing others who have progressed adequately through the curriculum. We house them off campus, and while they're in the LC program, there is 24/7 accountability while they're on campus, and they have constant supervision. We've been in operation for 4 years without any nuisance or imposition upon our neighborhood, and so we feel like it's a very safe environment. Men who enroll at Lifeline Connect pay no tuition, for this is a religious-based educational program other than a minor entry fee. They do, however, help maintain and clean the church facility and grounds and gain job skills by raising funds to support the program. Lifeline Connect is supported by contributions from people in our community, members of the church, and from other churches and individuals throughout the country. Residential recovery centers, when facilitated under the guidelines as proposed by this amendment, are less intrusive than motels, schools, nursing homes, libraries, and such, which are allowed under special use in Ag 2. So the good news is, and you've heard a few of the men that have been through the program, currently we have 6 men, and we've had approximately 30 men go through the program, and the good news is that some have been reunited with family, some are employed part-time, full-time, and many of them are substance abuse free. And of course we attribute that success to the grace of God and their personal commitment to use the tools that have been provided to them while in training. It's our desire to serve our community and the individuals and the families that are adversely affected by substance abuse addiction. We operate on this principle, that we can't do everything, but we can do something. So I want to encourage the board to pass the addition of this amendment for the good of our community and for the sake of men and women and families who need to recover from the destruction caused by substance abuse and addiction. Thank you very much.
Thank you all. Okay, this closes public participation. So we'll move on to any communications from board members. Mr. Kurtz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have two announcements, very short. We all remember the controversy over the wind farms a number of months ago, and one of the points that were made by some of our opposition to wind farms was that they were afraid that the tax code would not be renewed and that we would lose the revenue that this county would obtain from wind energy. I have some good news. Legislature, State of Illinois, both the House and the Senate, have passed through the property tax wind farm legislation, HB 4797, which extends the property tax for wind farms to 2016. I think that's one of the reasons that was stated for the wind farm opposition. Secondly, I was called by the Chicago Tribune, and I have a tentative date for the Olympia Drive cover story on their magazine of Sunday, May 23rd. Those of you who would like to take a look at that, that's a tentative publication date. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
I would just like to add that at your desk you found an announcement concerning the residential electronic collection drive. This will happen this Saturday between 8 and 1 over on Apollo Drive in Champaign. There's a list of the items that are included for collection. So if you have these or you see them clustered around somewhere, you might want to scoop them up and bring them over. Okay, let's go to page 2 of our agenda, which is this particular zoning case. Mr. Hall, would you come up here for purposes of discussion? I need a motion to direct the zoning administrator.
So moved. Second.
Motion's been made by Mr. Betts, seconded by Mr. Weibel. Discussion. Mr. Kurtz.
Yeah, this is the request for the zoning for this church. I want to applaud all of you. I know firsthand what it takes to help young men and women who are addicted to alcohol and drugs and gambling. I want you to know I applaud your efforts here, and I will be in favor of expanding this program to help our community and our young men.
Mr. Weibel?
I want to clarify for the audience, both here and on TV, that the resolution just merely is authorization to conduct a proposed hearing on this. There's actually no action that will take place as a result of this resolution.
All right. Ms. Ammons.
I did look through the list, Mr. Hall, and I wanted to find out what the impact of this particular change would do. I see the list that we have of the other things that are zoned specifically for this area. Would we be just changing it for this particular request, or would we be changing this for other similar or permanently in the zoning ordinance?
Well, the proposal is to amend the zoning ordinance so that things like this could happen in the R4 district anywhere, or in the Ag 2 district, so long as it's accessory to a church, is within 1.5 miles of a home rule municipality in Champaign County. I believe that's only Champaign and Urbana. And the special conditions that are in Attachment C would require it to be not just in the Ag 2 district and not just in the municipal ETJ area, but, for example, in a location served by public transportation. So, in fact, this is focused as narrowly as possible to allow the same thing in any similar facility, but it's actually a very small geographic area.
You meet all three of those requirements you just said in this particular case?
Yes.
Ms. Anderson.
And then to follow on with what John just said, if we did that change and someone else wanted the special permit, they would have to show proof of all those other things that you just mentioned in order to get that permit, right?
Yes, and in fact, it's the same process that this church would have to go through in order to get permission to expand.
Mr. Nudo.
I'm just curious, the number arriving at 30, is this something that the church thinks? I guess I could suspend rules and ask for answer to that question. How did we arrive at 30? What's the project going to entail in terms of cost and construction and time frame, etc.? How did you arrive at 30?
Actually, Alan, the 30 is based on the fact that in the Ag 2 district already, we allow small hotels with up to 15 lodging units, and you can expect a lodging unit to have two people, so that's 30 people. And in fact, the church, as far as I know right now, they're not planning to go all the way up to 30, but again, we're trying to structure this amendment generally to be consistent with what we already do in the Ag 2 district.
Anything else? All those in favor of moving this on, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
You're into the next step. Okay. Why don't we just wait about 30 seconds till we clear the room, and then we'll move back into the highway and transportation segment of the meeting.
You're all very nice.
You're welcome.
Keep up the good work.
Everybody but
Ms. Kohler? Mr. Blue? Where'd he go? Yes, Mr. Dennett. Ah. He's 10 minutes away.
Yep.
Okay, let's take facilities then. Mr. Reinhardt, are you here? Ah, yes. Good thing we're so flexible here.
That's right.
Good evening. First item on facilities is a project update for the courthouse exterior clock and bell tower renovation project. Entertaining the motion to receive and place it on file.
So moved.
Moved by Keller, second by McGinty. Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Okay, capital improvement projections roofing, and building and equipment capital replacement guidelines. Alan and Deb, why don't you talk about that, these two items?
Yeah. Well, as most of you are aware, we have stated the need to develop a capital facilities replacement improvement plan for the county. And so what we have for you this evening is the start of that plan. And on page 21 of the agenda is basically looking at the roofing systems for all of the county's facilities and what is required to appropriately set aside the funds that will be needed to replace those roofs on a timely basis. And going into the details of this, I would refer you to Mr. Reinhardt, who developed this. We're providing you with this because this is like chapter one of developing a full-blown capital improvement plan for the county's facilities. This is information that we had available. This is a plan that we will need to build over the months to come, where we document what are the window and exterior replacement needs for each facility, what are the HVAC systems and other building systems like the building automation system for the courthouse that we had to replace in an emergency mode last year. So we wanted you to see how we plan to build this, and then on the following two pages is just an overview of what the guidelines are that we anticipate using in developing a full-blown capital replacement plan. And with that, I guess I'd turn it over to Alan if there's anything you wanted to add.
Nothing I'd like to add.
Well, let me ask you a couple of questions.
Certainly.
Let's use the roofing as an example. What did you do to develop an annual reserve amount for the roofs of the structures that you've identified here? How did you arrive at that?
First, we used the historical data that we had available with the original installation dates. I added next the warranty period that comes with each roof, the expected life, the life expectancy, estimated the life of the roof itself from with the okay. After that, we took the basic cost, compounded interest for the expected term, of course, it is a shot in the dark. In 20 years, we know what the roofing system is going to cost. It gave us a base to work off. Excuse me?
Inflation, not interest, right?
Oh, excuse me. Correct. Inflation.
Okay.
I used a base 3% compounded interest, which gave us the estimated replacement cost in whatever year it was due, and then simply tried to... for the annual fund reserved the amount we needed to try to reach the reach that goal in that time period.
First, I want to comment that the facilities committee members who are here may recall that when we were last meeting, we actually had started a subcommittee. We were going to approach this project. It's something that Deb and I have been talking about for several months. The alternative to doing it the way that Alan has proposed is to hire a consultant to, you know, give us some numbers that are based on somebody's expertise. I don't think we have any money to hire a consultant, and so I think this is a very conservative way to try to approach this topic and set up a capital reserve budget. Chair Weibel?
I agree with you what you just said, but what we could do, maybe after we get everything done, is maybe consider then hiring a consultant just to verify what we have then, but that's off in the future.
That's true.
It could be years, 2 years from now. Just an idea.
That's true.
My question is, are these in any particular order?
No, they are not.
Okay.
Mr. James?
Basically, with the expertise you have at hand and with buildings, I mean, you've got your roofing systems, you've got your electrical systems. I mean, we all know what's in them, and then the exterior. I think that anybody with any knowledge at all can sit down and come up, and I think this is a good start. The only question I had was on one of those buildings. Was it the old highway building or the clerk sheriff's building? Didn't we put a roof on there, or the partial roof, or when all that storm damage was?
The last storm damage we had was on the Ilias building, which was the old nursing home. The Ilias building is not on this spreadsheet because at this point in time we're attempting to work it with a different, completely.
I'm talking about that one where we were going to convert it to the clerk's offices and that.
The South Highway garage.
Okay, I did.
Yeah, we did put a roof on that.
Okay, okay. But yeah, I think that's the best way to look at it. Just look at your buildings, like when, and if I may, when we look at the courthouse, you know, you have your masonry, which is going to need tuck point, sealant, and then just plan it out. And Alan, I agree with you. Shingles and stuff, based on what I've done, those things have gone up and down with the price of oil. So who knows what's going to be next?
Absolutely.
Mr. Jay.
Mr. Chairman, I'm ecstatic. we have for years been pleading for some kind of a plan. Alan, I don't care if it's not perfect. There's not too much perfect except my comrade Stan. But I'm really, really pleased that we've got a start. Thank you very much.
All right. Any other questions?
Thanks.
All right. Fiscal plan monthly report. I'll entertain a motion to receive and place on file. Moved by Em and second by who was over here? Kurtz. Discussion. Alan, is there anything you want to comment on? Anything in particular?
Not at this time.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Brookings lease for access initiative project. Entertain a motion to approve.
Second.
Moved by Jones. Second by, what was it, James. Okay. All right. Deb, you want to explain what this is?
Well, as you probably most of you recall, the Mental Health Board was awarded a SAMHSA grant in the last several months, and the Access Project Initiative is the outcome of that grant. It is a program that will be funded for 6 years and will have probably 5 to 7 staff members, and they need an office from which to operate, and looked at the old coroner space and determined that that space would be very good for their operations, and so are requesting to lease the space. The lease rate that we have quoted to them is exactly the same cost that the Mental Health Board currently pays for their lease space in the same area of this facility.
Questions? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The next item is the renewal of the Guild Building lease. Actually, that's an issue where we need to decide. Yes?
There's just one thing. Can I skip back? I'm sorry, I missed it. Is this under term? I think it's a 3-year term, isn't it? I mean, it says 2-year in here, but when you look at the dates, it's 3.
It's 3 years, yeah.
Okay, it says the term shall be for a 2-year period commencing on June 1st, 2010, and ending on the 30th.
Okay, we'll correct that before full board.
Yep.
Thank you.
Any other comments on that? All right, Guild Building lease. That may be the subject of a closed session, so let's defer it for now. And I have no other business that ends facilities. Mr. Blue.
Good evening. The Highway and Transportation Committee will go into the monthly report for the county and township motor fuel tax claim for April 2019.
Second.
Discussion. Chris.
Could
you use your microphone?
The QOS fees are fairly substantial. Can you tell us or refresh my memory what all that goes for?
Obviously we're part of QOTS, and all of their staff time and all of their work that they do has to be paid for by somebody. We pay a portion, the city of Urbana, the city of Champaign, everybody that's in QOTS pays a portion based on the amount of money that is divvied up through QOTS. So that money has been very similar since I've been here. It may have gone up just a hair, but it basically pays for Kuwatz to exist, just the day-to-day operations of Kuwatz. It doesn't pay for any of the studies. Anybody that has studies done or has work done by Kuwatz that is outside of the normal work of Kuwatz actually hires Kuwatz as a consultant, per se, to do that work. So that money is there. We have to have an MPO. We don't have any choice. In order for the Champaign-Urbana area to receive federal funding, we have to have a metropolitan planning organization, and they have to do the planning on behalf of us for all of the applications for all of the federal funds. So that money basically goes directly to pay for their services to the members of Kuwatz.
Mr. Nudo?
Yeah, just as a follow-up to that, if they ask for an increase in future years and our budget was, impacted like it is now, would we have some say in resisting that amount of increase, et cetera?
That would really be up to the policy committee of Kuwatz. I'm on the technical committee, so it would be a policy committee decision. Wouldn't be a technical or a staff-level decision.
But so, the board, I'm wondering if the board has some say in approving that amount.
We have a member on the Kuwatz policy committee.
Yeah.
No.
No, I mean, but do we have...
Yes, GIS policy works the same way, where the policy committee has to approve the budget, and I assume Kuwatz is similar.
Any more discussion? All in favor of placing on file, say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? The next thing is the county engineer's report.
I apologize for being late. My wife works and my son was somewhere. I had to have him by 7, and I was worried you guys were going to run past 7, so I ran to get him, so I apologize. First item on the agenda, resolution awarding the contract for the furnished and spreader bituminous materials for the 2010 maintenance of various road districts in Champaign County. Bid letting was held to on April 22nd, 2010 for all of the bituminous materials. This is the materials that the townships use for all of their seal coating on their roadways, to make their plug mix, to do any kind of asphalt application. This is only for liquid asphalt. It doesn't have anything to do with hot mix asphalt or anything like that. It's a bid based on a per gallon unit price. We had a single bidder, Ileana Construction Company from Urbana, Illinois. The prices for the larger item, the HFE 90 item number one, was unchanged from last year. The other prices went up a little bit, but not too much. As you probably well know, a couple years ago, asphalt prices kind of spiked, and they've kind of stayed there as far as emulsion asphalt goes. So these are the prices that we see. It's a good bid. These are furnished and spread on the road, so they bring the oil out in a tanker truck and put it in a distributor and spread it on the road on behalf of the townships, and the townships bring in their own aggregate supplies for the top coat for the ceiling. So I would ask that you approve this.
Approved.
Second.
Open for discussion. Fires?
Both of you surprised you only have one bidder?
No, we've had one bidder for, I don't know, how long, Chris? 20 years?
Are there any people who company that can supply that much amount? Is that what it comes down to?
Well, unless the code, which is the local asphalt distributor, you can't, when you're talking about having to move that many gallons of oil, and they have their plant right here in Champaign-Urbana, there's hardly any way to compete with them. Although if you look at counties around Champaign County and compare prices with other people that are supplying liquid emulsion to townships and counties, we're as good or better prices than the counties surrounding us.
Alan?
You. Hi, Jeff. I was just curious about the prices. I mean, a couple of years ago, I can understand why the prices of asphalt rose, because gas was to $4 and it was $130 a barrel. Today, we're not anywhere near that. And why is it that we don't see any
fallback on or reduction on some prices. Is there any way that there's a competitors out there that could give us a better price? If I don't know why it's still as high as it was two or three years ago.
Well, Emulsicoat buys their oil from people like Amoco, Marathon, the great big producers of fuel. And I'll give you the same answer.
Go to the Gulf. BP has a lot of it floating. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. I'll give you the same answer they give me. Because fuel is in such high demand, and there's a good price for fuel now. Asphalt is basically what's left over after they make fuel. They make gasoline. It's the bottom of the barrel stuff, and the people that make those fuels have come up with better ways to extract more fuel out of oil over the years. So the bottom barrel stuff, it's just like anything else. When you find a market for it, and then they start making less and less of it, obviously the prices, that's a supply and demand thing. So they're actually, you get a barrel of crude, and I don't know how many gallons of what come out of it, but they can get a lot more gasoline and fuel out of a gallon of crude than they ever could before because of the processing that they do on the fuel. And so asphalt prices are basically holding the line where they're at because of supply and demand. It's no different in California, New York, Illinois, Florida, or any other state. This is the way it is. Used to be, 5 years ago, it was 75 cents. Now it's $2.22. Price of doing business.
Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
Next item is the resolution awarding contract for the improvements of County Highway 20, which is the road that goes over to Royal. This is the 4-mile cold in place recycling job. Starts at the St. Joe Road, the road that goes south down to St. Joe and goes 4 miles to the west. We had two bidders on the project. We had Cross Construction at $1,305,000, Open Road Paving at $1,240,000, Engineer's estimate was $1,380,000. So the both bidders were below the engineer's estimate. Open Road Paving is the low bidder. The actual cold in place recycling work will be done by Dunn Company out of Decatur. So we have local contractors on this job. It's a good price. It's a good job. It's a recycling job, which is obviously good for everything. So I would recommend that we approve the low bid from Open Road Paving.
Move approval. Second.
It's open for discussion. Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Anyone tell the business, Jeff?
I don't have any other business at this time.
Okay, seeing no other business, there's no chair report, and there's nothing to go on the designated county board consent agenda. I mean, sorry, all of those. That's it.
Thank you.
Okay. Before we get into ELUC, one of the addenda that you have has to do with closed session minutes from these three committees, and I think what we'll do is do all three of them when we finish up the ELUC report, and hopefully just do these as an omnibus motion. Okay, first item on ELUC is a zoning ordinance amendment requesting to amend the Champaign County zoning ordinance through zoning case 634-AT-08. Is there a second?
I'm sorry.
I'm moving it. Discussion. Mr. Hall, you want to tell us about this?
This is the smaller wind ordinance text amendment that the committee has actually had on the agenda for the past 2 months. This is for small wind turbines, which would be 150 feet less in height and a turbine diameter of no more than 24 feet. Although it also allows for big wind turbines, which are identical to wind farm turbines, but the ordinance amendment is written so that you could never do more than three of those. I think it's unlikely the county would see any, but sometimes certain groups, institutions, or businesses do large wind turbines. So this is dealing with small wind turbines and those isolated big wind turbines.
Mr. Weibel?
What happens if somebody has a barn, they want to put a tower on the barn with a turbine on it? Now, is the barn part of the tower height or not?
Well, actually, roof-mounted turbines generally don't go higher than, I think, 15 feet.
Well, let's say I decided to go 100 feet. And my barn's, you know, 45 feet, so
in that instance, 60 feet. In that instance, I think it could be mounted on the structure provided it meets the same setbacks.
So is the structure that part of the tower height or not?
Yeah, but what ultimately matters is the actual height.
The height of the turbine above the surface of the earth.
Actually, the height of the highest tip of the blade.
Okay, is that clear?
That's clear. But what you ask in regards to height, that's not clear. We didn't get into that much detail. I think we can deal with that on a permitting basis.
Okay. You know, because it's quite possible somebody may want to put one on top of the roof of their house.
Absolutely. In fact, it specifically addresses roof-mounted turbines.
Anything else? Ms. Ammons?
So a church, basically, a church that... possibly changing it to an ag zone, they could actually put it.
Well, in fact, any wind turbine within a mile and a half of a municipality with zoning is actually the municipality's zoning jurisdiction. The county has no authority for any wind generator within a mile and a half of a municipality. And I should add that at this point in the process, the board is either adopting the recommendation of the ZBA or amending it somehow, and then this would come back to you next month for a final recommendation to the full county board. So tonight is just your preliminary recommendation.
Mr. Rosales.
I had heard that the University of Illinois was proposing wind energy or... where are they proposing to locate that windmill, if that's what they're proposing?
The last I heard, it was going to be south of Windsor Road. In fact, they're going to be owned. Those turbines would be owned by the university, which is to say owned by the state of Illinois, and that also would be exempt from county zoning.
Oh, so. Okay. And there would be... according to the requirements we propose, or what requirements or that exemption, is there any regulations within that exception?
It would be whatever they want to do.
Mm-hmm. And the whatever quantity is wealthy?
Provided it's owned by the university.
Or in university land?
No, it's got to be owned by the university.
Okay.
Just on a lease. If it's private owned on a lease, our position is that subject to zoning.
Interesting.
Mr. Nudo.
John, I have a couple of thoughts on this. On two levels. One is the technology that changes all the time here. From 2009, literally, to today, you've made some changes based on technology changes on advice from some retailers, as I read these acknowledgments, and some people who are in the wind farm business. And
when I look at this chart here that you have on page 44 and 45, I see what other counties are doing. My concern is, hey, we don't have any permits yet. We have zero people coming and getting in line here, and I'm wondering if we're just too detailed, if we're getting to a point where, you know, when I look at maximum rotor diameter, and I see the rest of the counties, by and large, including the American Wind Energy model, saying that there are no rotor diameters. And here we are with three different ones based on lot size. I'm not saying go to the lobbyists and have them write this bill. I'm saying get some advice. You did back in 2009 in three or four different places under your acknowledgments. I mean, I don't know why we wouldn't do this now to show them what we're doing and see if we've kept up with technology. Technology is going to go by us. These kinds of things, I think, to have this in writing just causes a rewrite. It also may cause people not to do the things that we want them to do. And I would just urge that maybe this board just take a step back and allow you to get some information from the same people you got information from in 2009 to see if this is the right way to go, especially when other counties, as I said earlier, are not in that same mode on technological issues like rotor diameter, noise limit. You're pretty consistent with the limit on the number per lot, those kinds of things. I'm not arguing on a lot of the stuff that you've done comparisons on. I think you do a great job in getting all the information out to us, and believe me, I've read this twice now. I just think that this is an important thing to find out why we don't have any permits that are forthcoming, and why are they growing in other places and Ford, and I'd just like to see what the people who are the end users feel about this. Thank you.
A little background. Actually, I think our first wind turbine was maybe 98 or 99, and we've been permitting them ever since. To date, we permit them using our existing tower regulations, which is by right provided it's less than 100 feet. Unless, of course, it's an agricultural wind turbine, in which case it's exempt from zoning, and we've had one of those. Throughout this text amendment, we had a local wind farm, a local small wind turbine supplier involved throughout, Bill Fabian, actually, he's a former county employee, and I doubt that it's reflected in the summary of evidence, but I know Bill's comments were very supportive, and he agreed with all of the choices of the ZBA. You, however, raise a great point. Why is it that some counties do not see the need to regulate rotor diameter? I can't explain that except to say that, once again, the public that attended our hearings were very adamant. They wanted the ZBA to limit rotor diameter.
I don't want to go back and forth, but my point is the technological points of what is out there right now, have you made sure that this conforms, your rotor diameter conforms with what's out there? And I'm not arguing that you should or shouldn't have these kinds of restrictions even though other counties don't. I'm saying technologically these things change, and I hate to see this rewritten in a year. We already went from 100 to 150 feet based on information we got from 2009, because they say you get more power the higher the rotors are. So that's what I'm getting at.
And now that I have a better understanding of your question, I can tell you that the ZBA in fact did look at lots of data on wind turbine rotor diameters and rotor diameter as a function of overall turbine rating, and these sizes were determined to be adequate. For example, the biggest wind turbine that we've permitted to date was this agricultural wind turbine. It's a Purdy, and I think it's about a 10 kilowatt unit, so we're south of Mahomet. It doesn't even have, the rotor on that thing doesn't even approach 24 feet. I think it's 21 feet. So, in fact, it's difficult always to portray everything the board goes through in these summaries of evidence, but For example, let's see, on page 55, just to give you an example, our ZBA, I'm sorry, on page 70, our ZBA knows the names of all the turbines currently manufactured that are available locally that comply with Illinois Pollution Control Board noise regulations. And that's just one example of how, and again, we did this because the public was coming to our meetings and raising this, these very questions that you're raising. And it was a very technical amendment the whole time. I don't know if that answers your question really, Mr. Nudo, but that was one instance where we were very much looking at the market, and the ZBA had the very same concern. They did not want to write a text amendment that would be out of date in a year or two. They finally were comfortable with sending this to you.
Anyone else? If not, all those in favor of approving this amendment to the zoning ordinance signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Item C. This is a recommendation from the administrator for removal of garbage and debris. Oh, I'm sorry. Request to amend the zoning ordinance, case 664-AT-10. Mr. Hall?
You may remember that you gave us permission to proceed on this amendment just a few months ago. This clarifies a contradiction in the ordinance for wind farm turbines regarding shadow flicker, and it also amends the zoning ordinance to be in compliance with state law regarding the number of ZBA votes required to affirm or deny a request. And the decision by the state's attorney has been in the past that regardless of what our ordinance says, we cannot establish a higher standard than what state law requires. And so this finally brings our written practice into law, into line with what the law requires. Again, this is the first time this actual ZBA recommendation has been before you, and so all you're being asked to vote on tonight is a preliminary recommendation, and this will come back to you next month along with any municipal comments that we receive in the meantime. I don't expect to receive any, but there's plenty of time to do a normal process on this.
Motion's been made by Mr. Beckett, seconded from Ms. Ammons. Is there any discussion from the board? Mr. James.
With this ordinance, maybe I'm a little dark on this issue, but who and how do you check for shadow flicker? Do you stand out in a field and just count how many times it flickers, or what?
The ordinance requires a shadow flicker analysis. I have no way of verifying a shadow flicker analysis. If we wanted to verify that, we'd have to hire a consultant. But anyhow, you're doing a shadow flicker analysis, which is supposed to indicate times, and so there should be no question what that analysis indicates as far as whether mitigation is required or not. And your ordinance wouldn't deny a wind turbine if it put more than 30 hours of shadow flicker on a residence. It just would require some mitigation.
Okay. But I guess, John, what I'm trying to ask is, let's say I got a turbine out in my backyard somewhere, and one of my neighbors complained that there's a bunch of flickering going on. Who goes out there, since we're passing this ordinance with this, who goes out and sees if it's not in conformance?
Okay. This does not apply to small wind turbines?
Well, say I got a whole bunch of them. I'm going to be like pies.
This only applies to wind farm turbines, and if you don't, right now, literally, you've got the word of the wind farm developer.
Okay, that's what I'm getting at.
Here's your microphone.
Thank you. My problem is we always write ordinances which are fine, and it looks good, but how are we effectively taking care of that ordinance once we do it, I guess is what I always worry about. You know, we can write all the ordinances we want, and some people are going to adhere to them, some aren't, but it's just a piece of paper. And like my lawyer once told me, you can hold up all the paper you want, it doesn't stop bullets. Thanks, Steve.
I was just trying to find out.
Would this, going on with Mr. James's example, would this give someone with a complaint some grounds to stand on if his neighbor's turbine is flickering too often or in a way that violates the ordinance?
Well, again, this only applies to wind farm turbines, and for anything to happen, that person would have to convince you folks to do something, because our ordinance doesn't... I can't deal with shadow flicker.
Mr. Beckett.
I guess my question is, without this provision, it's subjective. With this provision, we have an objective standard. The question is, if necessary, how would it be proved? And you're saying it would... some consultant would have to do it if the issue came up. But in the absence of this provision, it's going to be entirely subjective, whether it's too much or too little or unreasonable or reasonable or whatever. This gives us an objective standard.
Any other discussion? All those in favor of recommending enactment of this proposed zoning ordinance change, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries. Okay. Now we'll talk about the garbage and the debris at 1504 Northeastern Avenue in Urbana. John?
Our nuisance ordinance has language in it that takes advantage of a provision in the statutes which authorizes the county to remove garbage and debris without needing a court approval. And we have a lot of complaints of garbage and debris. And we're actually having good luck recently with folks taking care of it. This example is one where we're not having good luck. It's our worst example. We got off to a rough start on this case because this property is subject to an annexation agreement, and we did not accept jurisdiction in the beginning. Finally, we agreed to just to get something done. And we're heading back into another warm season where the odors are going to be bad for the neighbors. Our nuisance ordinance doesn't require me to get your approval before spending money like this. Obviously, it's common sense. So I believe that in the long run, removing the garbage and debris before we take care of the dangerous structure is probably going to cost more. But we have no way of knowing how soon the court would give us permission to take care of the dangerous structure. And with your approval tonight, we could begin right away removing the garbage and debris.
Mr. Beckett.
So if we do that, if we remove the garbage...
Can we get a motion on the floor?
Sure, I move approval.
Second.
Motion has been made by Mr. Beckett, seconded by Mr. Weibel. Go ahead.
All right, if we go ahead and have you take that step to remove the debris... are we creating a lienable event so that ultimately when we win in court and the property is ultimately disposed of, we have something of record where we're going to have to be paid back? Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right, and I understood that you to say that the estimate of the range of cost is like $3,000 to $9,000 to do this. Now, How can we get it for $3,000? I mean, I don't understand why the range is so high. Because are we just guessing? We don't know really how much it is going to cost.
I don't know exactly why the range is so high, but I can tell you we have four estimates, and three of them are within the vicinity of the lower end, and one of them is up at the higher end. And
so we obviously wouldn't take the higher one. So we're talking more like $3,000 or $4,000 than we are $9,000.
Yeah. All right,
thank you.
Mr. Weibel.
Any guess as to what the property is worth, say just the plot? So let's say the gallery's gone, the structure's gone, so somebody sell a plot. Just wondering.
I have no idea. I do know there are two neighbors who, in fact, have contacted the person who holds title right now about purchasing it because they just want to get it cleaned up. And suddenly the process started slowing down once the current owner realized, oh, there are actually people out there wanting to buy this property. So, frankly, I think if the county steps in and cleans it up, there are people willing to buy this and take care of it. But
my concern is that we don't spend more money than the property's worth. But I guess with our first step, probably not.
You know, if that's your concern, I don't know what to tell you to do about the odor and the vermin that the neighbors are putting up with right now.
I'd say we should go ahead and clean it up, and then hopefully we can get an idea of what it's worth.
Ms. Michaels?
It sounds to me like the cleanup is not just the physical items here, but also the tearing down of the structure. So really, the dollar amount that we're talking about should be more than this 3 to 5. I mean, have you really estimated the whole thing? I mean, it sounds to me like it's the whole thing that needs to go. So we're talking more than what's in this procedure.
Overall, certainly.
Yeah. And what's the time frame for that? Are you looking to get that done by the summer, or is this something that takes a long period of time? And then my other part of that is basically you'll put a lien on this property then?
Yeah, and we can't touch the structure until we're authorized by the court. And we haven't even had a court date yet.
You haven't found out how much the whole thing's going to cost to take it down? Because actually that's what we're doing.
In fact, we do have some estimates for taking the whole thing down. And they're very reasonable, and I think we can recapture that money.
Okay. Thanks.
Mr. Jay.
My question is if we took the debris and cleaned up the debris to start with and didn't get to the structure, and in the interim the owner decides that he wants to salvage his structure, do we have the ability to put the lien against just moving the debris if we don't do anything to the structure? To recoup our costs for removing the debris?
We do. I really can't explain, Mr. J, how we would ever recover that lien if the property never changes hands.
We can foreclose. If you have a lien, you can foreclose.
Okay.
I guess my question is then, we can get a lien by just removing the debris, even if we don't touch the building.
Mr. Wayne, no? Mr. Rosales.
Are there any fines basically given to this property for not cleaning up within a certain amount of time or a reasonable amount of time?
Our nuisance ordinance provides for fines, but the fines have to be imposed by the court.
Well, of course, that's what we're waiting for in over a year. And do they incrementally increase by month or by... How do you propose to fine this property in the long run? I mean, it might take 2 or 3 years for the courts to deem it condemnable. Do we fine it by the month, by the year, or?
Each day.
Each day.
And I believe it's a maximum of it may be $500 per day. But again, those fines have to be imposed by the judge.
Okay.
And we would argue fines starting from the first day that they got notice that they were in violation, which right now has been over 6 months, well over 6 months.
And I would imagine this property is not paying taxes either, right?
No, it is not.
Your information says that the East St. Louis people have paid the real estate taxes for 2006, 2007,
that's right.
2008.
Yeah. That's right. Sorry.
Wow.
Mr. James.
I'm just sort of curious, like,
there's a home in Rantoul, they call it the mold home, it got so bad, but looking at these pictures, and since we have some ordinances that govern some of this, I always wonder what's the liability of the county if we take no action, if we, you know, the property owners are around there that are paying their taxes, doing due diligence, and they come to us with several complaints, and we just say, oh, well, it's sort of out of our hands, we're not going to tackle it, or we don't have the money to tackle it. You know, that's why I always go back to ordinances. I think if we have them, there has to be some liability on our part if we don't live up to them, I guess, is the words I'm trying to use here. And what I'm seeing here, I mean, I can see with the wet weather, you know, all these doors and windows, and mold seems to be a big issue every time I turn around. Food, vermin, like you said, only knows out there what's crawling around. Rabid cats, and if something did happen and we've been put on notice, couldn't there be, and maybe Steve knows more about this, could there not be some liability to us? Doesn't it? No. And that's where I guess I get mad, because I think, you know, we are told, of course, we get our property tax bills and everything, and we all have to do due diligence, but then here we have rules, and sometimes I feel like, well, why have them if we can't do anything? I just don't understand it sometimes.
Mr. Beckett.
Well, I haven't been on ELUC, but I bet you month after month after month when the enforcement reports come in, people come in and say, well, why aren't you doing this? I know out where I live, there's a couple places that I just cannot believe that we haven't done anything. But it's a question of budgeting. It's a question of the state's attorney having the staff to do it. It's a question of beginning the cases and having someone to follow through. They have not historically in this county been a high priority case. Look at the state's attorney's office right now. They're down some staff members. Are we going to say we're going to take somebody off of felony prosecutions and put them on zoning enforcement? So I hear you, but let's put some teeth in it then. If, in fact, the problem is that the prosecution of these cases doesn't pay for itself. As you might imagine, ordinarily people who don't take care of their property don't have any money. And so that when you win the case, even if you have a judgment or a fine against them, you don't collect anything. So it's a vicious circle. And I think, you know, you just sort of have to take the worst case at a time, don't you? So I think that's what we're doing.
Ms. Ammons? Mr. Rosales?
I just quickly kind of did the math. 365 days times 500, that's $182,000, which I'm pretty sure is a lot more than what the property is worth.
Bankruptcy.
Would solve our budget problem, though, not yet.
I just want to point out that the court rarely assesses fines. Very rare.
Anything else? Mr. O'Connor.
How did this happen to fall on us, John? Wouldn't it be a city problem ordinarily?
Well, it's in our zoning jurisdiction. There's an annexation agreement with the city, and our position originally was an annexation agreement. That's a city problem. In a meeting with the attorneys, the city argued that this is first and foremost a nuisance problem. The city does not have a nuisance ordinance, and nuisance ordinance is not clearly covered by the annexation agreement. So in light of those facts, we decided, well, okay, let's get something going on this property. And I think it's a reasonable line of argument. But I want this board to know that, you know, if we end up in court with a judge who thinks that we don't even have jurisdiction because there's an underlying annexation agreement, I don't know what that ultimately could result in, but I want you to be aware of that. I think it's a problem that needs to be addressed, and we just deal with what comes in the court when we get to court. We're not even to court yet.
Mr. Dennis?
So basically the city wants it when things are good, and when they got a problem, they don't want anything to do with it.
Right.
Ms. Ammons?
I actually agree with Mr. Hall, but just wanted to ask if we approve this request, where the $3,000 would come from, or however much it costs, where would that come from to clean the property up?
That's our admin line item for this specific purpose.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's do it.
Mr. Kurtz.
Well, I think it's something we should do. I think it's time to show the county that we can get something done and show these neighbors who are upstanding citizens that the county can do something. So let's get her done.
Mr. Rosales.
If it is a nuisance problem and it's a health-related issue where, you know, anything could happen within that community, especially if you have two livable properties side to side, couldn't we just go in there and raise it?
Once we get court approval, we could. Can.
But not beforehand, even though it's a health hazard and...
Not beforehand.
Oh, my.
Anything else? All those in favor of moving along this recommendation for removal of garbage and debris, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to ask Ms. Chevarria to join us because the next item is... implementation of the land resource management plan for the remainder of fiscal year 2010. What I just passed around rather inefficiently was just a request for if you would like a paper copy or a CD or both of the LRMP that was adopted last month. I know you're all very excited to get copies of that final document, so if you could give your request back to me by the end of the meeting or to John Hall, we'd really appreciate it. We're looking to print this yet this month. Okay, on to the agenda item. Last year, we presented the work plan for the county planning contract, and it was passed. In that contract, we had about 700 hours as a place marker for implementing the LRMP. And as of the adoption last month of the LRMP, we had new text in the document that specifies that the county board will have the ability to provide input as to which items that are in the implementation plan of the LRMP should be prioritized for implementation as part of the work plan. So tonight I'm here asking for your input for how to spend the remaining time in this fiscal year for LRMP implementation, as well as your input for the upcoming fiscal year, because we will be coming back to you shortly with a proposal for next year's work plan. You have a memo in front of you. I think it starts on page 108 of the packet. From me, this packet, this memo lists the items that we identified in the implementation plan as being ideal to implement within the first 3 years. We also have the other 200 or so implementation items for your consideration. If you would like to bring those forward as well, we are happy to oblige. These are just what we would recommend based on all the input we received during the planning process, along with input from the zoning department and everything we've heard from the public. So we're just here to take your input. Mr. Beckett.
So my question is, it sounds like you're seeking an authorizing motion that directs you, that tells you we approve of your recommended plan over the six-month term. Is that right? Or the end of the year term, from now until the end of this fiscal year. Is that right?
That would be your decision. I
understand, but if we do nothing, you have no direction.
And
if you do a motion
ahead
that says
so,
we approve of what you've recommended, then you have some direction.
Absolutely.
Right? Okay.
Yes.
And so my question is, are you saying that you would be doing some work on every one of the items that you have identified on pages 109, 110, and 111? Or are you saying, or should we be asking you, what can you realistically do or work on between now and November 30th? because that's the motion I would want to make, the one that you say you can realistically work on, and then we can decide whether or not it's our priority. Does that make sense?
Yes.
All right.
We will in no way be able to get to everything that's in this memo in 6 months or probably even 3 years, because it's so dependent on how many meetings we have to go through to get through ordinance changes with the zoning board as well as ELUC, the county board. So we are looking for what would be what we could think we can do in the next 6 months or so.
Well, I think it would help me if you would tell me realistically what you think you can work on for the next 6 months, and that way I can decide myself whether or not that's something I want you to work on. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Can you do that for us?
I did bring a recommendation. I don't know if I should be speaking before Mr. Nudo, who's raising his hand back there. Mr. Nudo?
No, I spoke with Susan earlier today, so go ahead and, because we agreed that you were going to do that, then I'll say what I want to say.
Over the last couple of days, I fleshed out what I would have as a recommendation, and that is dividing the certain classes of work. Okay, and I'm trying to make this as palatable and quick as possible for you, considering we have so many implementation items that we could do. The first thing would be those tasks that are ongoing for the county planner. That would include priority item 9.4A, which is just developing a web page about the recycling program. Easy. We also have multiple priority items in the implementation plan that are related to looking for funding opportunities for implementing the plan. So it would just be beginning and continuing to look for funding sources so that we don't have to depend on the county budget so much.
Is that an item that is mentioned somewhere in the memo here?
Yes, it is. Multiple priority items, let me find it here.
Find it at the bottom.
Down at the bottom of page 204, priority items that indicate potential funding sources, monitoring and looking for them. And there's all these different objectives and policies related to that, but it just wouldn't be looking
at the bottom of
page. I don't have it.
It looks like it's on the bottom of 109.
Thank you. I don't have your page 109 either, so okay. I didn't get the packet. So on my memo page 204 at the bottom.
This is our 109 page at the bottom.
Thank you. Oh.
Madam Chair, can we just motion to table this till next time, and you go through it and bring us something that I can look at in 5 seconds and say, yep, that makes sense. This is just painful. I'm sorry, it just is. Bring it back. Tell me exactly what you think is a priority. That'll give me, other than working through it here at a meeting, I'm sorry, it's just, I don't think that's productive use of my time.
Mr. Nudo.
Yes, I spoke with Susan earlier today, and I commended her for getting this put together so quickly. However, we are not following what we said in the preamble of our goals, objectives, and policies with the LMRP. What we said was, in May of each year, the county board adopts the annual budget process resolution establishing the parameters for the ensuing fiscal year budget. Based on budgetary guidelines established by the annual budget process resolution, the Regional Planning Commission planning staff shall present in June of each year to the environmental and ELUC options for a work plan for the ensuing year. The options presented shall be based upon the LMRP and the annual budgetary guidelines as stated above. ELUC shall establish the priorities to be accomplished for the work plan and recommend approval that work plan to the county board no later than September. So here we are. We're worried about the 700 hours, how we're going to spend the 700 hours, which comes first, when we said all along that before we pass any new ordinances, we wanted to know what the cost of it was going to be, ongoing, and who is going to pay for it. That was the only reason a lot of Republicans supported this thing. And we got on board because we said we did not want the planning. You know, why should the planner use some of the 700 hours that's going to come to the board and then get rejected by the board? We should be first. This was what Carol said all along when we started on this. Why should we be in front of what? Why should they be in front of what the board really wants? Let me read one more thing to you. And that's in advance of what I just read to you. The specific intent, language, and terminology of the objectives and policies are used to provide clarity and guidance for any related future regulatory changes considered by the county board. The level of specificity documented is not intended to be binding, but it is intended to be providing examples of how LMRP goals can be addressed and implemented by future county boards. So once again, I don't see where the county planning people have to be out here writing stuff up to present to ELUC before we say this is what we want. This is what we talked about originally. And now the first thing out of the blocks is how do we spend the 700 hours?
Mr. Beckett.
I'm sorry, Mr. Nudo, I respect you, but I disagree. That's not what this is. This is Susan coming to us saying, this is how I want to spend our time the rest of the year. And I've heard from you plainly that you're watching us and you want to know what I'm spending my time on. And the process for budgeting for 2011 is what you just talked about. That's not what she's talking about here. She's talking about what am I supposed to work on for the rest of the year. If I just go off and do it myself, you'll be all over me like I'd be on an ape. So she wants some guidance, and I think it's very realistic and reasonable for her to come here and ask us for some guidance. So let's give her some guidance. And I agree with Greg, I think there's a more practical way to do it, but there's nothing wrong with her coming to us to say, I've got the rest of the year to work on, and if I just go off and do it, you'll be jumping on me.
Mr. Nudo, then where does the effort to find out what the costs are going to be in advance and who's going to pay for it fall in? That's my point. Before we have her writing things up, we need to have those kinds of costs established, and whether it's 2010 or 2011. That's what we agreed to.
Which came first, the chicken or the egg?
Okay.
So she's got to do something. Well, there has to be some transition into this process. You know, give the lady a chance to do it.
Ms. Anderson.
Well, I would assume that they are going to work on preparing the budget with recommendations, but one of the things you just mentioned was monitoring and pursuing potential funding opportunities to help with the implementation, and that seems to me like something that would be practical to do as a beginning. And the other thing I think you were suggesting was developing a web page, and this would be to get out information
regarding the recycling program events.
Well, I understand that there is some money in this year's budget. Is that right?
This year's budget has $700 allocated, and it has a certain amount of money that is equal to the 700 hours in staff time.
Do you know what a web page development would cost?
That is an easier one to estimate than a lot of the others, yes. I could estimate in the range of $500 to
$1,000. Mr. Beckett.
You get the drift, don't you? You think you could get us a document that
yes.
was much narrower, that had the cost factors added to it? And
no, sir.
You can't give us cost estimates?
What I have stated regarding cost estimates is that we have no way of finding out how many meetings, how many permutations of statements and things that you're going to ask us to go through, how many things we'll have to go through with the ZBA. And so we could estimate staff time that goes into the background writing. I can do that. But like I said several meetings ago, it would cost us about $5,000 to come up with a cost study of implementing the 200 different items. So if you'd like to narrow things down for me, then I can definitely try to provide some cost estimates for you.
This is, again, it's the chicken and egg thing. I'm not the professional. You are. I need you to tell me what you think are the real priorities. I need you to give me some cost estimates because I don't know the number of meetings that are involved, and I don't know what the planning process is. I have to rely on you to give me those numbers. I just can't have you give me a list of everything that could possibly be done and say, pick some. I rely on you because you are a professional, and I want the guidance from you. But I want a document that when I read it, it makes sense to me, and answers sort of anticipates the questions that I'm going to ask. I know there'll be more. There are 27 of us. I want to work with you. I want this to be a success. I don't want to be here criticizing anybody. I support the process. I just want us to get into the transition so that it works smoothly. I guess that's what I'm saying. And I agree with Mr. Knott. I would move that we defer this next month to next month's ELUC meeting for that purpose.
Second.
We can't defer.
Before you make any motion, there are a few other people who want to speak. So can I get?
I can't even make the motion to defer. I can't. I have to make. I know, but I can't.
You can't make a motion to defer.
I have to make
not
a motion
any...
to suspend the rules.
Okay. That's your motion.
My motion is to suspend the rules so I can make a motion to defer.
And Mr. McGinty has seconded this. Okay. Discussion on the motion to suspend the rules. Mr. Nudo.
Yeah, I agree with this only because this goes back into ELUC, which is where it belongs. I guess if we can't start the process for 2011, I agree with this process so that we do get a county board looking at these items and they decide what the priorities are. I don't feel the planner should be deciding what the priorities are for us. The county board has to do that.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Point of order. The motion was to suspend.
Okay. We need to vote. All those in favor of suspending the rules, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed.
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Now I move to defer.
Can I let Mr. James talk? Mr. James, go ahead.
Thank you very much. After listening to Greg, and then I was just going to sort of simple like what the highway department did and what Mr. Beckett is saying. You're saying you have 700 hours, and you know what your budget is. You know what your money budget is, I'm sure. John can tell you or whoever. But looking at a list, I mean, you should be able to sit down and say, okay, estimate. We know that we can't hold your feet to the fire and say, hey, you went over 20 hours or you went over this. But give us a short list of maybe 10 of items that you all consider high priority that are basically going to finish out the year, because we can't tackle any big projects right now that's going to be a big expense anyway. Like the web page, like you just said, you estimated it off the top of your head and how many hours. That's great. The other stuff ought to be simple and just spread it out there. Give us 10. Let us go through them and pick what we think is right, and we're done.
Somebody, Mr. Jay.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Deb, if we have to go down this road that you painted this rosy picture for us here a week or so ago of the shortfall, how much of this is the shortfall going to affect this particular program if we have to start cutting?
Well, what's being presented to you tonight is what has already been approved and is incorporated in the fiscal year 2010 budget. The shortfall, if there's going to be an adjustment to the 2011 budget, RPC will know that before they start working on the 2011 proposal. At this point, we have not brought a recommendation to the board to cut the fiscal year 2010 budget, but if and when we do, I would assume, since this is a General Corp funded operation, that this operation might also have to look at cutting back on some of its expenses.
So we might not have enough money to fund the 700 hours at some point.
We haven't made that determination yet. I believe Ms. Chevrier is operating off of what has been approved, just like all your other departments are, what has been approved for fiscal year 2010.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. McGinty, did you want to say something?
The reason that deferral is a good idea in this case is because, while I agree with Al that we should be making the ultimate decision, I believe that it's important that we make it based on specific recommendations we get from the professionals that operate areas of this county on a day-to-day basis. For us to, I absolutely agree with Greg that for for us to make decisions based on a list that really isn't prioritized or that we're hearing only orally tonight is unreasonable. That we need that ahead of time. So the motion to defer, which I'm referring to because we should be just talking about that at this point, makes good sense until we get information in front of us for us to make an informed decision. We can't make it unless we have specific recommendations from various departments that lead these efforts, because I don't know. So I think we need that information before a meeting so that we can digest it and then discuss it in a useful way. This seems to always happen around these issues, and it is such a waste of time for us to beat around these various bushes just to come around to a decision to defer. So let's defer and get our act together for next month and then have a reasonable discussion about this, please.
Mr. Kurtz.
Susan, John, if we defer tonight, we obviously all agree we need to condense this list. Can you put together with John the most immediate priorities and give us some numbers attached to it so that when we get a list of, say, 10 or 15, and how long would it take you to put some of those numbers together so that we can use the dollars that we have now effectively to go forward?
I have the list of priorities. I will be able to get something to you for next month. You say my feet are not held to the fire makes it so that I will not feel too threatened. But once again, I do reiterate that the costs that you're asking me to put together are impossible to quantify exactly because of the number of meetings that might or might not be required for any one ordinance change. And the majority of the things in this activity are ordinance changes. And we don't know how many might be lumped together at once, because sometimes they do that. We don't know how many might come individually to you. We have some that are extremely controversial that could take up to a year. So for you to ask me for a cost estimate, in my humble opinion, is a waste of time. In my humble opinion, I believe that I should provide you with the recommendations, and that given the money that we have already allocated, assuming that it will still be ours to spend, that you will let our staff efficiently spend it as well as we can, and when the funding runs out, that's where we stop on the list of priorities. I will do whatever you say, and I can have the information ready, but I do not think that it will be dependable information.
Ms. Michaels.
I believe a lot of us are looking for that information as a guideline, not necessarily as an exact. We understand there aren't exacts. That is what an estimate is, an estimate. And then the other part that I have to say is I would like to see the list definitely based on priorities, not necessarily what will fill the 700 hours, because I gut feel that we're going to have to take some of those hours back.
Anyone else? Mr. Nudo.
Yes. Susan, can you also provide what the cost estimates would be for those priority items as it's stated in our preamble, and how it's going to be paid from what area?
You're referring to what you and I discussed in the phone conversation.
Whatever priority items you feel are the highest priority to go after, not just the 700 hours, that just what is that going to cost? If you put in a website, who's going to install it? How much does it cost to install? That's the upfront cost. Who's going to maintain it? How much man hours is that going to cost? So that we have it available for the budget. That was the whole point. Whether it's in 2010 or 2011 or 2012, that was what you were required to do according to this preamble.
Yes, sir.
Can you?
Yes.
Anything else? So the motion on the floor is to defer this discussion until the June Committee of the Whole meeting. All those in favor of doing so signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries. Okay. Monthly report. Mr. Hall?
At your desk is a monthly report for April.
Do I hear a motion?
Place it on file.
Thank you. Motion made by Mr. Beckett with a second from Mr. Langenheim. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Okay. There is no other... Oh, the other business we have, and I'm referring to the addendum found at your desk.
There's still a facilities item. There's one more facilities item.
Right. Can we do this first, though?
Yeah. I just want to make sure you said the only other business. I'm not letting anybody go to do this.
Okay. You have at your desk your review of the semi-annual review of closed session minutes from Highway and Transportation, from County Facilities, and from the Environment and Land Use Committee. I need a motion to approve to maintain as closed on the advice of our attorney.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Knott, seconded by Mr. Kurtz. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Okay. Do you have a motion?
Let me get up there.
God, are we testing tonight?
Okay. The item that's left on facilities is the annual renewal of the Gill building lease. And if this was just a simple, let's renew the lease, then we could just have a motion and do it. But it's not. It's more complicated than that. And we could go into closed session because we're talking about a potential negotiation with a landlord regarding the renewal of a lease. But I really don't want to go into closed session. So I guess, can everybody kind of hold your tongue and not talk about the legal niceties of whether it's a good idea or a bad idea to renew this lease, okay? Or what we would do if we were approaching the landlord about renewing the lease. Can we just talk globally about the issue? We got these property issues that I'm going to lay out for you, okay? Can everybody agree? Because if we start talking strategy about negotiating leases or terminating leases, we're tipping our hand to someone who is trying to make money off us. And we don't want to do that. That's why you go in the closed session. I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. Yes, Mr. Langheim.
Just what is the issue here?
Well, if you give me a chance, I'll tell you.
Well, I'd like to hear it.
Okay? I'm prefacing it so that people don't open their mouths and start talking about what we shouldn't be talking about in open session. Okay?
Closed session.
All right. You know, what we should be talking, we should not be talking about it in open session if we're talking about negotiations, all right? All right, here's the deal. We've got a lease at the Gill building that's up. And at the desk tonight, Deb did some calculations. You see the amount of rent that we are paying for the Gill building, and it escalates every year. Everybody sees that. I'll just tell the committee of the whole that the facilities committee looked at the Gill building, and I'll just say in general, the facilities committee does not like leasing property. Is that a fair statement, facilities committee? Anybody want to contradict that? In general, we do not like leasing property. But here's the problem. We moved the coroner into the Gill building. We finally gave him his own space. The county clerk, we had to move the county clerk's storage of election equipment out and put it down the hall here in this pod over here where it's stacked on top of one another. And when the county clerk has to test the equipment, then we have to give up this meeting room. And you know, as you might imagine, it's not very, very useful. This was all because we're on hold due to the South Highway garage. I'm tearing some. I said this. I told John Jay. I'm tearing scabs off. That's what I'm doing. The South Highway garage is part the sheriff's and part unoccupied right now. Our goal was to move the county clerk and his election equipment into that other part of the South Highway garage. We had some miscommunication amongst people who didn't communicate with each other ever, and we found out that the HVAC needs for that equipment are much higher than what's present in that building. We've had an architect look at it. Alan will correct me if I'm wrong, but if he's still here, he's probably not. Deb will. In my judgment, the amount of money that it would cost to do the HVAC to be able to store the election equipment in that building makes no sense in relation to the value of that building. Just makes no sense whatsoever. You're talking about spending a couple hundred thousand dollars for a building that probably ain't worth a couple hundred thousand dollars. It just doesn't make any sense. Alan says that he can move the physical plant, which is in the Gill building, to the South Highway Garage. We suggest that instead of leasing property, that we consider building an FBI building on the lot that is immediately north of Animal Control and immediately south of 1905. So if you go out Bartell Drive on the east side, you'll see the lot. You'll see the space where we are. If we were to do that, instead of leasing property, we'd have a building that we own. Now, there are some members of the Facilities Committee that actually had advocated this, an FBI building, instead of the improvements to the South Highway Garage. So they're here looking at me saying, I told you so. That's fine. I don't mind that. But the real question is, we need some direction. I need some direction from the committee of the whole about whether you want us to fine-tune this information and come with a proposal for the next meeting, because we do have at least notice that we have to worry about. We got a deadline. When is the deadline?
The deadline is June 23rd, which is the day before the June County Board meeting.
Okay. Yes. Mr. James.
I submitted some of that original FBI building, and so everybody knows that's like the Harley-Davidson building, that's similar structure in the Ludlow, Thomasboro Fire Department. Buildings like that that are structurally sound and good buildings and technology's changed. But I would say, looking at the lease, we ought to be moving toward that goal of owning and having our own building.
We would, if we were to do that, we would put the coroner, the county clerk, and some county storage space in the FBI building, and we would not have leased property. That's the premise here. Mr. J.
Well, I got a question, but I'm afraid to ask it. You told me to keep my mouth shut.
I didn't tell you to keep your mouth shut. I said I don't want to talk about negotiating with the landlord.
Well, there was another option, and I don't know how to bring it up with...
bring it up.
Okay, I'll just bring it up. I think we ought to look at our own building. I'm one of those that didn't like to rent. I don't mind admitting that. But there might be such a thing as we could buy a building in this area somewhere for less money than it would cost us to build a new one. Could we look at that option, too?
Yes, we can. Yes, we can. We can do that, too.
I'm sure Deb hasn't got anything to do.
Well, I'm not sure we'd have Deb do it, but we can do that. Mr. Rosales.
I move that, that you crunch in numbers and come back on June 23rd with a sum.
Well, we do this at our June... We do this at our June meeting, but the problem is we probably have to make a decision before June 23rd. So I guess I'd ask this. Let me ask you something.
While they're negotiating, if you have these little slips from Susan filled out.
Because right now...
What?
Back to my game.
Oh,
down.
You did? Oh. Okay. Yeah.
All right, I didn't get yours.
That's a good question.
All I have to say is 6 more.
Here's what I want. I want a motion to authorize the administrator to negotiate for an additional year or a part thereof while we work on this. That's the concern that I have. In other words, a year or less, that we authorize the county administrator to negotiate for a year max or a part thereof while we explore these options.
I'll move that motion.
Mr. James, second by Mr. Jones. Discussion. Ms. Ammons.
Sir, I just wanted to ask, I see the relevance and makes absolute sense. I just wanted to know, in the interim, where the facility building money will come from.
Well, that's
so
one.
The committee will, I'm sure.
Well, this is in the budget. Everything that we're doing right now is in the budget for the rest of this year and would have to be addressed in the 2011 budget. It would have to be addressed.
And so when we get the recommendation, it will come back with recommendation as to the 2011 budget.
You're absolutely correct. One of the major components of this is how do you pay for it? Mr. Jones.
I'll address this to Deb. Maybe you can come back with an answer at some point. But I know the sheriff has expressed an opinion that the downtown jail might not meet his needs in the next 5 years. Maybe let's say that. Rather than building a new building, I'd like to consider maybe that building would fit the coroner, because the coroner told me that, because it's got the garage and everything underneath it. So before we rush out and build new buildings, we could continue to rent for a shorter period of time, knowing that we might have a solution down the road for that.
I guess what I'm saying, the motion that I have asked to be put on the floor gives us the opportunity to explore all of those options.
I think we should consider more than just building or buying an unrelated building.
Whether with that motion we will when we come back.
Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Okay.
And let's see, from facilities, I don't think there's anything for board. Right. All the Brookings lease consent. Everybody? Okay. The mental health lease.
Yeah. Okay. That's all we have for tonight. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Yeah.
Motion by Ammons, seconded by Kurtz. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
I think I'm going to do it.